Whiskey! Slither! Ringworm! Rubbish! Bumblebee! Flabbergasted! Ha! The sound of it!
Peter Piper picked Prince Proximo a pack of pickled peppers by the Pontar.
And welcome to News Trash here on The Geek Show, the weekly episode or the weekly podcast or the weekly series, whatever you want to call it or wherever you're listening, where we talk about news or trash news, whichever way you want to phrase it. I am Rob and I'm joined as ever by the newsreader of the hour, Rob as well.
Hello! Yeah.
But what I really like about these videos is each video, we're in lockdown now, and each video I get more and more dishevelled looking. My hair gets more wacky, and there's nothing I can do with it because my hair is basically a sentient being.
Yeah.
And he wears a hat.
I wear a hat to cover up my dishevelment. I'm seriously covering up. Why do you think I hide half my face with the microphone? This side of my beard is particularly scraggly today.
Yeah, well, this is my sixth COVID beard. We'll see how far this one gets. It's one of those, like, you know what they used to do with those series where they take a picture a day?
Yeah.
It's like that, but a video a week. Just see how it comes along.
Yeah, I mean, you could end up with a magnificent full, Jeff Bridges, is it? From, was it Jeff Bridges in? No, it wasn't. It was, what's his face? Who was in The Thing with that magnificent?
Kurt Russell is my biggest idol.
Yeah.
And mustache idol, because he has a magnificent mustache in The Hateful Eight.
Although Jeff Bridges, it was in True Grit, the remake.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, he had a magnificent beard in True Grit.
Yeah, but Kurt Russell's my beard idol. Every man has a beard idol. It's just the way it is. So, with that out of the way, that totally relevant discussion that we just had out the way.
Yes.
Let's talk about video games, shall we?
Yeah.
But before we do, though, just saying that, our main driver of YouTube video game content was Impossible Mission, and that's been gone probably longer than we'd like it to have been. But now, we were saying in the last year, in the before times, that Impossible Mission was going to go on camera. Well, honestly, there's no real point of that when this has sort of taken that responsibility.
Yeah.
So Impossible Mission will be coming back quite soon, and it'll be in the old format, so please do look forward to that. But yeah, enough chit-chatter, enough hoo-ha, enough willy-nilly, enough whatever synonyms. Let's just jump into it, shall we?
Yeah. Quick update on a story from last week. We said that the law firm Chemical Schwartz, Kreiner and Donaldson Smith LLP might file a class action lawsuit against Sony for the DualSense drift on the controller. And they've gone ahead and done it.
On whose behalf? That's what I want to know.
See, this is the thing. They haven't actually mentioned... The plaintiff is Lunark Turner and similarly situated consumers, whatever that means. And, yeah, it's the lawsuit is... it argues that the DualSense controller is defective as it suffers from a drift defect, a problem that sees it recording input even when the player is not using it, and that the issue compromises the DualSense controller's core functionality. It's pointed out also that repair options at this stage are slim, and also accused Sony of failing to disclose this material information to consumers despite being aware of the defect. Now, that's the bit that kind of makes me think, hang on, Sony were aware of this, but didn't tell anyone.
That's not true. Well, there might have been to an extent, but not, you know.
Yeah.
It's the sort of, we've said it before, but it's early consumer beware. These are the sort of level of testing which just aren't possible in-house. So
yeah,
issues arise. I mean, when the Xbox 360 was, when Microsoft were developing the Xbox 360, do you think they had any inclination of how big of a problem the Red Ring of Death was going to be?
No.
No. Don't be silly. Of course they didn't. These things only appear when they've got millions upon millions of units in millions upon millions of houses testing these things at a varying degree of, hammering it.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I'm curious to know, and I'm sure that Sony have very good lawyers, and they'll probably ask this question as well as part of the... as part of this whole legal proceeding, they'll probably ask, How many hours a day were you using it for?
Also, this is a thing that can be improved by a software software updates. Also, yeah. Also, this makes me think that the person who is instigated this legal hearing, legal case, is very, very young, and it's their first console launch where they actually paid for it.
Possibly. I'm not sure. The lawsuit states, as a result of Sony's unfair, deceptive, and or fraudulent business practices, owners of DualSense controllers, including plaintiff, have suffered an ascertainable loss, injury in fact, and otherwise have been harmed by Sony's conduct. Accordingly, plaintiff brings this action to redress Sony's violations of state consumer fraud statutes, breach of warranty, and unjust enrichment. Plaintiff seeks monetary relief for damages suffered, declaratory relief, and public injunctive relief. Bloody hell, legal language is hard.
What was the name of the lawyer?
The lawyer is Chimicals, Schwartz, Kreiner, and Donaldson Smith. And
so one of the former partners was Lionel Hutz, but he got sort of disbarred. Because that sounds like the level of legal practice that this company is set at.
See, this is the thing. I said it last time. Chimicals sounds like a Pokemon or something like that. Chimicals, okay. I choose you.
It's like a rock monkey. Like a monkey which has got like a rock-like type skin. It's called Chimicals.
Yeah. And his special attack is Chimikick.
Honestly, they're not going to win anything.
I mean, this is one of those things where, right, the interesting thing about this is that I think Microsoft had a similar issue, and they asked a U.S. District Court judge to force the plaintiff in the lawsuit over the defective Xbox controllers to go to individual arbitration rather than proceeding through the court. And that's, since that precedent has been set, that might be something that happens with this lawsuit as well.
Only in America.
Yeah. I mean,
this is kind of like the perfect, this is prime rib satire for the idea that all Americans know how to do it, sue each other.
Well, that's where Britain got its, blame and claim legal advertisements from. I hated those advertisements where, there's somebody falls over and then you have these suited lawyers help them up and they walk them to the door in some creepy, X-Files type manner, like they're going to kidnap them. And you see the person holding their arm even though there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not being xenophobic in making that comment. There's around the world, there's the stereotype, there's the belief, there's the idea that Americans just sue everybody. It's a stereotype that was perpetuated by the Americans, so it's not our fault that we're picking up on this.
Yeah.
We're just making an observation.
We saw it in so many things, from the TV shows that they were exporting to the rest of the world, where you had people basically suing each other, to news articles where people were basically threatening to sue each other.
Yeah. It's just not really done anywhere else in the world.
No. Most of the rest of the world, people just hit each other. Be done with it.
Yeah, moving true. On. Okay, it's next true. Story.
the next story. And if we were living in a world where people hit each other rather than litigating against each other, this is a fight I'd want to see. In fact, I want a cage match. Epic versus Apple.
Do we have to talk about this?
Well, it's, again, more of an update on what's going on. Epic have basically expanded their antitrust complaint against Apple by introducing their antitrust complaint to the European Union. And they've already launched legal challenges in the US, Australia, and the UK, and now they've included the European Union. One of the big differences between the EU complaint and the rest of the world is that they're not actually asking for money in this one. They're basically just asking for Apple to stop its what was the wording they used?
Basically, the percentage that you have that take of every sale.
Well, what they're saying is they don't want money for the EU one. They just want Apple to stop its behavior by stopping other other application platforms or preventing other developers from putting apps on their platform for spurious reasons. So, okay, yeah, fine. You don't want money, but the rest of them, they do want money. To which Apple's responded in a very strange way, See, Apple have basically gone to Valve.
Okay.
Yeah, Apple are pulling Valve into this. They've basically gone to Valve and said that we want documents from you. And it refers to a subpoena from last November that Valve, that they sent to Valve, wanting information about Steam, about sales records going back 6 years and yada, 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 and all sorts of stuff that Valve just isn't willing to give up. And Valve have already volunteered some information to Apple, but now what Apple is saying is, that's not enough. We want all of this information. And Valve is saying, well, hang on. Some of the information you want, number one, isn't relevant to your case, and number two, is secret to our organization, and we won't impart that information to you.
You ever get the feeling that a company gets so big, they stop being a company, and they start becoming a secretive cult?
Yeah, because
all three of these parties have basically went past that level of being, we are a secretive cult.
Yeah, because Valve have basically said, somehow, in a dispute over mobile apps, a maker of PC games that does not compete in the mobile market or sell apps is being portrayed as a key figure. It's not.
It's a slow news week, isn't it?
Apple have already got information like this about app sales and stuff from Google and Samsung, who compete in the mobile app market. Right, they've got their own app. They've got their own app stores, everything like that. So that's fine. But Valve only has Steam, which deals with PC, specifically PC.
PC, Valve's competitor is Epic.
Yeah.
So there's a degree of crossover, but on a completely different platform, with a completely different set of software, on a completely different financial level.
That Apple has no involvement in the first place.
No.
So that's why I'm confused as to why. I can kind of get why they've done that, because they want to show that Epic is making money from the PC in the first place, and yada, yada, yada. But it's a stretch, isn't it?
What this all comes down to is the fact that Apple are basically a dragon in a cave of all of the gold, wanting more gold. They're a $1 trillion company, one of the first $1 trillion tech companies, beating, they reached that milestone before Amazon and before Google, I think, and they still want more money. The greed of that company is staggering.
Yeah, and I at the end of the day, it's... yeah, it's...
Capitalism.
It kind of makes me depressed at how, you know, I can just imagine Valve just standing around just loving the fact that Epic are being kind of mired in this legal argy-bargy with Apple. Just standing there with the popcorn going, hey, this is a good fight, isn't it? And then all of a sudden Apple just notices them off to the side and goes, here, we want some stuff off you. They're like, what? We got nothing to do with this.
Taking a bit of a serious turn. Well, not serious. But Apple are basically the Vince McMahon of the tech world. Vince McMahon, if you don't know, is the owner of WWE. And it's not meant as a joke. It's basically, last year, Vince McMahon laid off 40% of all of the staff of WWE so he could retain his profit margins. And not only was he retaining profit margins, it was WWE's most profitable year of all time. And sometimes with Apple's behaviour, they are totally Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Hopefully the managing director has the same swagger walk as Vince McMahon does as well.
What's his name? Tim, what's his face, who runs Apple now? Tim Cook, that's it. I'm sorry, I'm just imagining him on stage, and now I'm imagining Vince McMahon next to him, and one of them is like massive, and the other one's basically a stick.
The other one's a 70-year-old man as well. Well, plus 70, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so next story.
So,
There's not really much to say about that other than what has been said already.
It's one of those weeks where not a lot has been happening, but EA did finalise their acquisition of Codemasters and have stated that they're going to revolutionise racing games. Yeah. We've heard that statement from them before when they said they were going to revolutionise football games and basketball games and Star Wars games.
So basically what they mean is they're going to stuff it full of microtransactions. There's a revolution. Yeah. Not revolutions, are good revolutions.
Exactly. And I think that's an important point you make there. I'm hesitant about how they're going to revolutionise racing games. I know that Forza has been kicking some serious backside in racing circles.
Yeah, it has.
But and Codemasters have got things like F1, Project Cars, Grid, Dirt, World Rally Championship, and a whole lot more. Whereas EA only have Need for Speed, Real Racing, and Burnout. And Burnout, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty much a dead franchise.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I don't think Codemasters are very profitable, but they're just consistent rather than very successful.
Yeah.
So they'll constantly turn a profit, but they won't make a lot of money. So really, that's kind of a studio which can only reach so far because basically, racing games aren't mainstream anymore.
No.
The only sort of level of company that could make them mainstream again is something the likes of EA.
Yeah.
But in becoming mainstream, what is being sacrificed?
Yeah. Because I'll be honest, I'm not a fan of the Need for Speed franchise.
It's got moments. I quite liked Hot Pursuit 2 back in the day.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Burnout, I've always been a fan of Burnout. But again, when they did Burnout Paradise, they really dropped the ball with that.
Yeah, I don't like the open world of it.
The remastered version of Burnout Paradise was all right, but Forza basically cracked what Burnout was were trying to achieve with the open world.
Yeah, I mean, it's the city, the inner city is kind of dull.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Forza basically cracked it by just saying, okay, you can go pretty much anywhere, off-road, on-road, wherever you want to go, just go. I don't even know anything about Real Racing.
Yeah, I don't either.
Never heard
honestly,
of it.
Honestly, I don't know how EA is going to do it. I don't trust EA at all to do anything. I'm amazed they made a few good Star Wars games before that license went out to open tender. Honestly, genuinely amazed that they were half as good as they were.
Well,
but at the same time, EA still has the stigma as one of the most money-grabbing, selfish organisations in the video game industry.
Yeah, okay. See, this is the sad thing, right? EA did Battlefront 1 and 2, right? The remakes of Battlefront 1 and 2. And Battlefront 2 is a really good game, ruined by microtransactions. Horribly ruined by microtransactions. But when you go back and play it now, it actually holds up really well as a game. And that's the sad thing.
Yeah.
You know, some of the games that they put out.
That's what I hope. Because honestly, it's been far too long that the racing game has been out of the limelight of the video game industry. And the reason why I think that's an issue is because honestly, it's been the era of the third-person action adventure with RPG elements. And the mainstream could do with shaking up a little bit. It could do with being a bit more than just those action-adventure games, massively multiplayer online or free-to-play games. There's no in-between in the mainstream, so if the massive EA can help racing games get to the top of the ladder again, I'm all for that. However, at the same time, it's how they do that I'm not so happy or eager to find out more about.
I have an idea, and I don't know whether this is what's going to happen, but I suspect, aside from the F1 franchise, which I know that EA have desperately wanted to get their hands on, because there is a lot of money in that license.
Also, before you go any further,
yeah,
they need more arcade races. That's all.
They need more arcade races. Weirdly enough, that's actually where I was going to go next. Right? Because I know that they've desperately wanted to get their hands on the F1 license, because there is a lot of money there. Okay? But Codemasters did a really interesting concept of a game, of a racing game. And obviously there's the rally games and Dirt. There's, those licenses are big, big licenses. But Codemasters put out Grid, right? And Grid is, I think, the one that EA would probably look at with the most potential. And I honestly think it does have the most potential in terms of making racing games popular again. Because as much as I like the rally games, Dirt...
You know how Dirt sort of passes me?
Yeah.
Well, my perception of that series is.
Yeah.
Racing's fine. Racing's perfect. I'm not going to dispute that.
Yeah.
But its aesthetic presentation makes me think of an uncle which is trying to be cool with his teenage nephew and niece.
Yeah. And that's why
he's doing all slang, and he comes wearing baggy pants, and it's bit, he says like words that are completely out of the modern vernacular, and it just feels so weird and out of touch whilst also being in touch.
That's why I bring up Grid. Because you were talking
I think of Grid.
See, this is the thing. Did you play the latest Grid?
I haven't had the chance yet.
Okay. Was it the first Grid or the second Grid that you played?
It's not important. It's just my perception of it as a series.
See, this is the thing. I honestly think that the base concept of Grid is actually the one with the most potential, because as you were talking about wanting more arcade races, Grid is more of an arcade racer. It's not as technical and simulation-based as the other racing games that Codemasters put out. And part of the reason for that was the fact that you basically had different racing styles. It wasn't like the F1-based thing. What I love about Grid is the fact that you basically have two laps and you have to get into the top three within those two laps. You don't have to go round and round the circuit repeatedly for like 60, 70 laps or however long a race actually is going to last. You got two laps, that's it. And you basically have this virtual YouTube type feed where you basically gain fans from putting videos out about your races and stuff like that. And the more fans you have, the more money you make, the more cars you can get, the more parts you can get. You can improve that way. And I think that that's a great idea that is just looking for a bigger platform to showcase itself on. And I think that if EA and Codemasters are going to work on anything and push it forward, it's going to be Grid.
Maybe.
Because the thing is, Grid had drift racing, it had technical racing, it had rally, it had all of them in one game. And the whole idea was, you know, prove you're the best racer. So anyway, obviously you can tell I'm a fan of Grid. So moving on. Okay, so a couple of bits about conferences this year. GDC have dropped their plans for in-person conferences for this year. But the big thing is that E3 is the big one that everyone's talking about. And it's been stated that if E3 don't work out how to do a conference, then someone else is going to. So the pressure's on the ESA.
Well, I don't think it's even as basic as that. I think they already have figured out how to do it. I think 2020 was the year which killed the idea of needing to have a conference in a specific city and get all the press there for one weekend.
Yeah.
Those events weren't for the industry. They weren't for the people involved in watching these things. All they basically served at this point of the day is a big meet-up for all the journalists to have a big boozy weekend.
Yeah.
Because honestly, most of the people who interacted with them did so online.
Yeah, exactly.
And 2020 was the year in which events promoting content for new games went online. And honestly, people preferred it because it made it more accessible. And you weren't just bamboozled. You could sort of dip your toe in and find out things every now and again. And E3 saying they're going to do it digitally this year. I think, honestly, they're going to struggle because all of these companies set up their own thing and they're happy doing their own thing and their own thing was successful. So if they can do it on their own, why in the hell should they pay the money that ESA demands to do it with them?
Well, I mean, Nintendo did a Nintendo Direct in the last few days, didn't they?
And yes, they did.
That had a lot of people watching that.
They were the first one to sort of jump out ship.
Yeah.
And I think Sony was kind of the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
And COVID was basically all the rest of the nails in the coffin.
Yeah.
So the idea of a big event like that is basically gone the way of the dinosaurs. I think in the future, honestly, any events like that are basically 100% consumer geared. So EGX or PAX or stuff like this, where you just go somewhere and have a go at a game that we've been talked about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, GDC. GDC is the one that is the one that I'm kind of not surprised by, because that's like the main developers conference, and so even though it gets a lot of press, a lot of the people who tend to attend GDC are people who work in video games rather than just being consumers of video games. So not being in person, okay, yeah, we understand the reasons why, but I mean, It's gonna be weird it being kind of online stuff, because Steam have been doing their virtual festival conference, whatever
you want to call it. But at the end of the day, that's what it all comes down to, isn't it? 99% of the people who were engaged in these events do it online, so what really changes by them all going 100% online? Nothing for most people.
Yeah, I mean, it saves on travel costs for one thing, saves on hotel costs, saves you a lot of money, actually.
And they don't have to like pull together a trail at the last minute.
Yeah.
And pay hundreds of thousands of pounds, because apparently that's what it costs to get like a standard E3.
Do you know, when you start putting numbers on it, you save a lot of money by not going.
It's incredibly old-fashioned. I think, honestly, E3, as it was, is dead.
Yeah.
If E3 is going to come back again, it's going to be a 100% consumer-based thing. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all it can be now. I think 2020 put to bed the idea of that style of event.
Yeah. Ah.
I know that wasn't the story, and I kind of hijacked it and put it in my way, but it's just something I wanted to say.
No, that was the story.
Oh, well, I did rent. I did good then. I did good.
That was basically the story. COVID has basically changed the world, and this is another way. This is another way it's been changed. It's not going to go back to the old way of doing things. It's too late. That ship sailed. Moving on to a bit of a warning for people here. Ubisoft have basically put out a statement. Or rather, not so much Ubisoft, but a YouTuber called The Rad Brad. He put out a tweet saying, "Just a heads up to all content creators, there is an email from the official Ubisoft address going around that claims beta access to Far Cry 6. It even has an embargo with a special password for access. According to the YouTuber, clicking the invite's accompanying link will install a virus that watches your screen and records everything you do. Ubisoft's support feed confirmed the fake beta invites were a phishing attempt, warning recipients, please do not respond if you have received this email or similar." So,
okay.
Phishing scams have started hitting gamers now in a big way. I mean, beta access to something like Far Cry 6 is going to get people clicking.
Yeah.
So they're getting smarter. So be warned.
I haven't really got anything to add to that. It's not a conversation. It's just saying something.
It's a public service announcement. So that's it. Yeah, that's all we have for this week.
Is that it, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Been a slow week.
That's pretty short. Is there anything you want to talk about at the end?
Well...
anything you want to just air or discuss or... Just end the show a little bit more. Like, it actually ends rather than, oh, that's the end. Oh, bloody hell. That took me by surprise.
Because the problem is that we've already agreed that, you know, we're not really going to talk about people doing their jobs because we don't really class that as news. So even though, you know, you got people like the, you know, what's-his-face who set up that new studio and is going to be working on another horror game. We don't need to go into that because it's someone doing his job. Bloober Team, they're looking to broaden their audience because they mainly do horror and now they want to do action as well.
Well, there was the rumour that Bloober Team were involved in making the new Silent Hill game in 50-50 or whatever percentage it is with a prominent Japanese studio.
Yeah, that's not happening. They're not making Silent Hill, apparently. They're working with a different publisher. Apparently. Allegedly. That's what I'm saying. Allegedly, because Konami have basically... said that they're working with somebody who isn't Bloober Team on a Silent Hill game. Now, unless they're making two different Silent Hill games...
Well, there was that rumour for a while. A soft reboot and a episodic one like Until Dawn. That was the rumour.
Because they're making one for like a Japanese audience, but they're also putting out to tender a couple of their other franchises. I think it was Castlevania and...
Metal Gear, yeah.
They're putting those out for other developers to work on, and they're just waiting.
After Metal Gear Survive and that Contra disaster,
yeah,
I think that's the best thing they could do, say, for actually selling the whole entire catalogue of games. Yeah,
put it out to other developers, see what they can do.
Like Disney did with the Star Wars license.
Yeah, and
just let other people have a go at it.
Yeah, I think what they shouldn't do is get locked into a long-term contract like Disney and EA.
Just on a game-by-game basis.
Yeah, just do it on a game-by-game basis because at the end of the day, that's the only way you're going to ensure that you're getting the best out of a developer the moment you say, right, you're tied in for this many years on this many games.
Yeah, there's an idea as well. There's a lot of backlash against the idea that maybe Metal Gear Solid is being done by somebody else. Find it rather tedious that people think that Metal Gear can only function with Hideo Kojima. Because honestly, Hideo Kojima is an awful writer. The thing that he's good at is creating sort of mythos and creating weird characters.
Oh, but didn't you know? Quiet is, you know, she's got to wear those skimpy clothes because that's the only way she can teleport, by exposing so much skin. Really? Really?
Yeah, Metal Gear Phantom Pain was kind of the point where I went,
if that's the actual truth and you believe it, then explain to me the whole shower scene.
I paid £3 for Metal Gear Phantom Pain, or $3 or $3 or whatever
you
are.
You were robbed.
Yeah, it's just not a good game. And honestly, if some other studio, not just giving it to anybody like they did with Metal Gear Survive, because Metal Gear Survive was awful, but if they give it to a studio who has their head screwed on properly, they could probably make a Metal Gear Solid, which is far better than anything that Hideo Kojima made. Because like I said, he is the single... This is a controversial opinion, I know this. But he is the single most overrated person in video game culture.
Who did Deus Ex?
The original, I can't remember.
No, I mean the, you know, Human Revolution Mankind Divided.
That was a Ubisoft subsidiary,
I think. No, it was published by Square Enix, wasn't it?
All right, it was a Square Enix subsidiary then. I can't remember.
was it Crystal Dynamics? Or?
Yes, I think it was. And they did Tomb Raider, and they basically shattered all over the industry with the Marvel Avengers game.
Before they shattered all over the industry with the Marvel Avengers game, I would have said, let them have a try at it.
Yeah, I mean, many people would do a good job. I just don't think holding Hideo Kojima to ransom to make something is the best either party, really. I think let Hideo Kojima do what Hideo Kojima wants to. Just don't make movies, because his movies might be the worst in the history of the cinematic medium.
Oh, I just thought of a horrible partnership.
Just
horrible, horrible partnership. You know where I'm going with this.
Or David Cage and Kojima.
Yeah, making a movie together.
I wanted to end this on an upbeat note, but yeah. The industry wouldn't accept either of them on the account that they can't write anything that's just awful.
See, this...
And I realise that's a controversial opinion, but it's my opinion, and everybody's got opinions, and everybody has the right to verbalise them. Just not aggressively.
Understood why people regard Kojima as being a talented writer, because his stories are full of holes.
Garbage and gibberish. But like I said, he's great at characters and he's great at mythos, but not at putting things together.
That's the thing. You can be great at characters, you can be great at mythos, you know, that's not a problem, but, you know, that's, you know, anybody who's good at concept work can come up with great characters and great myth. The problem is world building and stringing it all together, making it all fit together, like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle.
He's okay at world building. He is okay at world building, but stringing it together, he basically has that day off work. And lets the intern do it.
See, I'd say he's decent at world building, yeah. But I wouldn't say he was.
Yeah, but stringing it all together, really fake.
Yeah, I think that Kojima's problem is he gets distracted by shiny semantic things.
No, he gets distracted by the entire industry thinking the sun shines out of his ass, so he starts believing his own hype and pulls things out of his ass too, which are ill-conceived and unfinished.
Oh, you mean like the entirety of Metal Gear Solid 2?
But anyway, this is going to get us in trouble if we go on much further. I know how much the internet likes Hideo Kojima. He is their best boy. So, was there anything else you wanted to bring up, or is that a line that we're going to draw here?
No, we'll draw a line under that.
Yeah, that's it for this week of news trash. Moving on, the Patreon bit. Let's not jump the gun, mister. I'll keep it brief this week. If you head over to www.patreon.com/thegeekshow, there's two tiers. On tier one is Director's Lottery, exclusive podcast in which we've penned it, the Random Choice Movie Podcast, big list of directors. We pick a number, and whatever director that responds to, we do him, and we pick a bigger movie and a smaller movie. Most recent episode, which just released a few days ago, was John Waters. At the £3 or $3 tier is an extra episode of Pop Screen, a podcast which Graham does of a series of rotating guests in which he looks at movies with pop stars in any sort of level of their creation. And yeah, that's it. If you want to support the Geek Show, there are the means that you can pick right now, but we are in a state of developing what the Patreon is and what it can be in the near future. So check that out if that interests you or you like what we do.
I'm Graham Williamson, and I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring, by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no, can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hello, and my name is Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to the return of Impossible Mission. I started it a little bit weirdly there, like I've forgotten who I was and where I was and what I was doing.
You're Rob.
I know that much. But it's been like mid-December, the last time we recorded one of these, and today it's like the 22nd of February, so it's a little time.
Yeah, we did have a rather extended hiatus while we just kind of, well, there's lots of reasons.
Yeah, we went on walks in the park and were serenaded by chipmunks that somehow, for some reason, have really high-pitched voices. What happened to those chipmunks in that cartoon, Rob?
Hang on. You're making this sound like some weird version of Lady and the Tramp, in which case I am not Lady.
No. Yeah, I was kind of suggesting you were the other one, to be honest.
I am happy to be the Tramp.
Yeah. Yeah, joking to one side. But yeah, we did promise before the new year that this was going to be an on-camera piece. No, it doesn't need to be. We got news trash to fill that void. We're just going to continue rambling on, but it is going to be part of the podcast feed, so News Trash and Impossible Mission will team together to make the Omnizord or something.
Megazord. You're talking about Power Rangers, aren't you? It's a tortured Power Rangers stuff. Analogy. It's a really tortured Power Rangers analogy. You're on about a Megazord.
I was a He-Man and Turtles kid.
And I wasn't.
And Baker Mice from Mars.
Okay, now you're hitting the age when I was at university and Biker Mice from Mars was on and I watched it, but not for the same reasons that you did.
Yeah, I'm a 90s kid, so with that, I don't know how I'm segueing out of that, but I'm going to try. Yeah, Burden of Choice. I didn't really segue out of it. There was lots of cartoons in the 90s. I loved cartoons in the 90s. There were so many cartoons, I didn't know where to begin. There we go. Yeah. Retroactive segue.
Just crowbar that in there. Yeah, Bird of Choice. It's a weird thing to take note of, but it exists now, I think, more than ever so before in video games. I mean, going back to when I was a kid playing video games, there weren't many video games that you had access to. They were rare and they were expensive and you had limited access. And so we all knew the titles that we all wanted to play and everybody wanted to play the same titles.
Please don't turn this into Old Man River.
No, I'm not turning it into Old Man River. I'm just giving context to the way things are now. When I was growing up, and again, when it came to the 90s, when you were into consoles and stuff like that as well, we all knew, because there were only a limited number of games, weren't there? We weren't flooded with game after game after game. There weren't like half a dozen new games coming out every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that wasn't like the angle that I was really pushing forward this. I mean, there is that aspect to it. There is the aspect of there's more games than ever. There's thousands upon thousands of titles on Steam and PlayStation and Nintendo and Microsoft. That's not the issue.
That's just the consoles. That's not even including mobile platforms.
Yeah, you know, mobile gaming is largely pointless because it's all gacha or match three or microtransaction heavy and microtransaction heavy where it basically makes FIFA look quite conservative.
Yeah, but the thing is, even with all of those, you still get some games that are actual dyed-in-the-wool games. And that's the thing. A lot of these games, are because of the microtransactions, they're being offered for free.
There's all of that being released, but the sort of the core facet of what this episode is about, it's about sort of subscription services. I've got to relate it to movies, because I'm a subscriber by proxy to Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Disney Plus, and I'm toying up getting Shudder as well. And honestly, it comes to a point where it gets to the time of the evening, I think, I'm going to put a movie on. I load up Amazon Prime, I think, too long. Then I close that, I open up Netflix, it's all TV, can't be bothered. Then they open up Disney Prime, no, Disney Plus, nothing on there yet, nothing, it hasn't been upgraded yet. So I go back to Amazon Prime and I watch Futurama or South Park or something, because there's so much choice, I just can't be bothered. That's happening with video games now, with the likes of Games Pass and PlayStation Now. If PlayStation Now was actually any good, I mean, before that, you know, PlayStation Plus is giving you games, the Epic Store is giving you games, Amazon is giving you games, everybody is giving you games.
Yeah, and that's just those platforms that are giving you free games. That's not including just the literal sheer weight of games that are available that you can buy. That's just the free ones that are being given to you, or the ones that you're getting for free. I use that term very loosely, as part of your subscription. And this is kind of the point I was getting to with what I was saying, about when we were growing up, we had a limited number of games because we didn't have subscription services or anything like that. And so we never had to suffer this kind of kid in the candy store where your eyes are just so large and you can't actually decide because there's just so much choice.
Yeah. And that's a problem, I think, because unless you're talking about Games Pass, because it is the thing which is at the heart of this for me. Games Pass, I don't think, is all that great on the premise that it's not going to be helpful for people who are making these small independent games. I when you break it down in the economics of Games Pass, the lion's share of the money that a games developer gets of being on Games Pass will go to the big games, the AAA games, the games that get people through the door. The likes of The Gunk or Steam World Dig or Inside don't get people to subscribe to Games Pass. Red Dead Redemption does. Borderlands do. And proportionally, the indie games aren't going to get a lot of financial reward. And time-wise, the indie games are going to be a bit more buried.
See, this is the thing.
It's like a separate issue. It's like a adjacent issue, yeah.
It's an adjacent issue. The weird thing is, because I actually do understand, recognize what you're talking about in terms of promotion. Game Pass, I think, needs a lot of work in order to be helpful for indie devs. The kind of just playing devil's advocate for a second there. It has been reported that Games Pass could be very helpful to indie devs, especially to small studios, because it can basically make the process of getting their game out simpler than it is on other platforms. Which, you know,
yeah.
I think that the two can't work together. You can't make it simpler for indie devs to get their games onto a platform or out to a wider audience, but then not actually work to promote those games. Not put them in a place on your storefront where they're going to get attention. Do you see what I mean?
In the irony is, compared to PlayStation Now, Games Pass is the best case scenario, but even then, I don't think it's great because by the sheer metrics of the amount of games that have been released,
yeah,
you're missing like 90% of what's out there.
Well, I mean, Steam suffers from the same problem. When you look at the Steam storefront, what you'll see on the Steam storefront, right on the first page, are all of the things that, you know, are popular and, you know, or have made a name for themselves through marketing or whatever. You won't see the things that maybe you want to pay attention to or that you're looking for straight away. You'll have to dig through pages of Steam to find a game that might catch your interest. You might have a specific interest in a specific type of game, but you might have to go through a couple of pages before you find any games that fit your criteria.
Yeah, and I don't know how Games Pass works, whether you add things to lists or whatever, but that same sort of idea is there. You know, you're going through Games Pass, you think, oh, that's on Games Pass, I'll download that. Oh, that's on Game Pass, I'll download that. By the end of it, you've got a 100 gigabyte hard drive full of games. And where'd you begin? So instead of like looking at those games that you've got and you're subscribed to, you're just going to end up gravitating to something because you can't be bothered with anything else, because you end up circling that, you know, drain. You think, oh, well, should I play that? Meh, can't be bothered. The nights are a bit too short.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
I know.
I've had a long day. And then you got all this available and you just think, you know what? I'll just play FIFA.
See, there's a big irony in what you've just said, part of the irony is that what you've said is the truth. I know people who have, the new consoles, and like on the Series X, a few people I know have literally hundreds of games already downloaded and installed on their machines. And when I ask them how many they play, they say, 3 or 4.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point, you know?
And my second question has to be, that's the thing, my second question to them is, well, why did you download so many games? It seemed like a good idea at the time, is probably the most common reason given.
You're just drowning in stuff, and yeah, and this is a separate issue, I think, but for me, personally, the reason why I can't really invest in that sort of infrastructure, that Game Pass, that subscription service for all your games infrastructure is fundamentally because I don't think you value stuff as much when you are not paying like the money to get in the door.
Yeah, you're not. And the bizarre thing is, right, remember years ago I said to you, everyone is a collector of something.
Yeah.
Okay. It suddenly strikes me through what we're talking about, and I've literally just had this thought, it suddenly strikes me that this whole subscription service, because I've seen people do this with Netflix and I've seen people do this on Mal and on various other websites where you can basically record what you've watched, stuff like that. It's a form of collection. It's a form of proving, you know, your worth by having this here and showing it off to people. Look how many things I've got on my list. Look how many games I've got installed on my machine. Do you see what I mean?
Well, that's getting into an entirely separate issue altogether. That's sort of straying into sort of like achievements and trophies, which...
Not so much the achievements and trophies, but just saying, but I've got...
Same sort of idea.
Yeah, you know? I've got this many games installed on my machine. I've watched this many anime. I've seen this many films. Because you're on that whatever that website is where you record.
Letterboxd,
yeah. And you know there are people who basically just checkmark every single film they've watched.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? It's a form of collection.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, when you're paying like let's say $60 or £60 for a game, you feel like you owe it to yourself to try and get as much out of that game as you possibly can.
Yeah.
You might not finish it, but you get as much out of it as you can manage. Whereas, because it kind of trivializes the fact that you own it a little bit more, because you don't actually own it, you're just sort of renting it from Blockbusters.
Yeah.
So if you don't like it within sort of an hour or so, you think, you know what, I've got another 100 games, I'll delete this one off my hard drive and just try one of those other 99.
So again, we come back to the main reason why I prefer physical copies of games. Because number one, I actually own that copy of the game. So if I want to uninstall that game from my machine, I can, but I haven't lost it because I cancelled some subscription service. It's still there.
It's fine, you know, having the burden of choice, but I think here's going to be a generalization that I maybe shouldn't do. But when you get older, you got to pick your time, you got to pick your games, and you got to get your worth out of the games, because, you know, you only get a game for a few hours a day after work or because you got kids or whatever. The idea of having hundreds of games and playing all your hundreds of games is kind of a bit younger. It's a bit younger skewing.
Yeah.
The value of that is very much younger skewing.
Yeah. I don't think that's a generalization. I'd say that's a pretty accurate. I'd say in terms of generalizations, that one is probably more accurate than most. There are a lot of people who fall into the, you know, over 30s gamer category, who just simply don't have the time to play games for 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day.
Because people don't play that long, do they?
There are people who basically spend all day playing games, and I don't understand. Well, I do understand the lure of playing games all day, but I couldn't bring myself to do it because there are too many things that I would class as more important than
video games. Yeah, but we're kind of getting away from the point there a little bit, because this is a video game show. I mean, having choice is great, but where does choice start and being drowned in options begin?
Just on that point, right? I already said I prefer physical copies of games. One of the reasons why I prefer physical copies of games, because like you, I've got Netflix, I've got Amazon Prime, I've got Disney Plus. You know.
Oh, just on that point before you go any further, I have those.
Yeah.
But I would much rather have the movies on there on disc so I can do it whenever I want.
See, this is my point. Again, you're jumping ahead of me. You've got to stop thinking like me.
Well, it's not really thinking like you. It's kind of a common thing. We constantly hear that physical things are dead, that people don't collect things anymore. But that's not true. For God's sake, vinyl's made a resurgence. So have cassettes.
I've already established all of this thing where you go on to like Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, or you go on to Game Pass and you start checkmarking all the games that you've got or that you own or that you've played. You know, all this trophy hunting thing. It's just another form of collection. So anyone who says that people who collect things, you know, they don't exist. You know, it's a fallacy. Anyway, here's the thing, right? If you want a physical copy of a game and you have it like a shelf of games that you own, yeah? If you want to play a game and you don't have any subscription service, if you want to play a game, you'll pick one off your shelf, you'll install that game. You absolutely want to play that game because you've taken the time to pick it off your shelf, put the disc in, install the game, and sit down and play the game. So that means you don't have that burden of choice because you've already made your decision, you know which game you want to play.
Yeah, the thing is, as many positives as we could do in a version of this show where we basically say our burden of choice is amazing and it opens up so many different games that you wouldn't try or you don't have the budget to have a go because, you know, money's finite and we can only stretch it so far. So people tend to stray towards the big games and, you know, dabble a little bit with a lot of littler ones when there's like quieter periods.
Yeah.
But having like a subscription like Games Pass allows you to have best of both worlds. But at the same time, having everything available at the touch of a button is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And
it literally is the kid in the candy store. And I I'm going to stretch this analogy a little bit because it's already started happening. That whole thing about the kid in the candy store, you know when they get overwhelmed by choice and they just start bawling their eyes out because they can't actually make a decision? Doesn't that describe several things that have started happening amongst the gaming community more recently?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we all wish we were dogs and, like, you know, when you put all of the food in front of a dog, the dog will eat it all.
Yeah.
But we can't be like that. It's just, it's not possible.
But the thing is, a kid can't do that because a kid understands that there, you know, a child understands that there are limitations. It's only allowed, like, maybe one or two sweets in this entire shop full of sweets, but it can't decide which one it wants, and so it starts crying its eyes out. That's that is certain sections of the gaming community. You know which sections I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, a new part of the show.
Yes.
Which we want you to get involved with if you are watching or listening on the podcast feed. If you listen on the podcast feed, head to thegeekshow.co.uk. You'll find all our social links there. Get in touch with us through the social links there. But this is a part of the show that we're finishing on called Game Fights.
Yeah. Okay, right. So the whole idea of this is the current topic is burden of choice. Yeah. So with all of these games available, how do you decide what to play? So the idea here is, which game do you return to with so many games available? Which game do you constantly go back to, regardless of whether it's, you know, every few weeks, every few days, every few months? There'll be one game that no matter what, no matter what other games you played in the interim period, you'll always go back to that game. And it could just be for a day, it could just be for an hour, it could be for a few days or even a week. And then you'll put it down, you'll go away, you play other things, but then you'll come back to it again later on. Which game is that for you?
Well, you go first.
See, bizarrely enough, for me, I had to go with FIFA. And yeah, I thought about it.
Good like that, yeah.
See, this is the thing. I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it. And I thought, what game do I always go back to? And I didn't even think about FIFA. For a long time, I did not even think about FIFA. I thought about all sorts of other games. I even thought about games like Gran Turismo Sport, and, you know, even games that I play on my mobile phone. But then I thought, hang on, every time I go back and play FIFA for like a few days, and then I'll put it down and I'll go do other things, but every single time I'll go back and play FIFA.
It's kind of a boring answer, but it's boring because it's kind of accurate.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I could make up all, you know, all sorts of other reasons for other games, but if we're talking like a bread and butter game, something that I will always go back to and always sit down and play, it's FIFA.
Yeah, so that's you. Me, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt.
Really?
Yeah, I'm on my fourth playthrough.
Wow.
Yeah, I know I shouldn't. I know it's really long. I know it's really long. But at the same time, it's the characters.
Yeah.
They feel so... You know when you watch, like, a sitcom?
Yeah.
Say, like, Futurama?
Yeah.
And they do a great job of making you feel like you're one of the gang.
Yeah.
Like, you're really disheartened and upset when the series finishes because, you know, those characters were your friends and you never see them again.
Yeah.
The Witcher has that sort of attachment to me. I love The Witcher because I feel like... I know these characters. I feel like I'm part of this world. And just visiting them again, it brings... it warms the cockles of my heart, if the heart has cockles. I don't think it does. I think cockles are unrelated. I think they're a kind of crustacean. But I move on.
Yeah, I never understood that phrase, it warms the cockles of my heart. Go the whole hog and say barnacles. My heart has barnacles of the heart. It doesn't.
But yeah, that's what really... I keep on going back to The Witcher over and over again because I feel like it's part of, I belong to that world. I feel a really close friendship and kinship with that world.
Yeah.
If you go back in past generations, I felt exactly the same about Mass Effect 2 and 3. The amount of times I replayed those beggars. Oh my. And because, I'd probably say a Mass Effect if it was one like worth release this generation, but there wasn't. So And the Witcher just kind of came in and filled up that hole and filled up that desire.
See, it's the bizarre thing is, for those of us who, for those people who know us personally, right, they probably would have switched our choices around.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big irony here is that most people would have had you as playing FIFA regularly and me as playing The Witcher regularly.
Yeah, well, it's one of my top five games that I've ever played, The Witcher 3.
See, this is the thing. Most FIFA games don't even enter my top 10. But I think it's, for me, it's just the pick up and play aspect of it. You know?
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to sort of conclude this aspect of Movie Fright. So, yeah, comment below on which you think is the better sort of pick for a Movie Fight, or Game Fight, I should say.
Yeah.
There's not a right answer, but there's
I was going to say Movie Fight is someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, Movie Fight is the podcast which I stole this idea from. But, yes, comment below in which you feel like you gravitate to more.
Yeah.
There we go. That's a good way to round it off. So, I think that's it for the first returned episode of Impossible Mission, isn't it?
Yeah. If you like the video, then give us a thumb, a sub or a bell. And if you want to see more videos like this, then please support us on Patreon. The details are in the description. That's it from Impossible Mission for this week. Join us every other Thursday for more video game chit-chat. Until next time, thanks for watching.